And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from Bristol, Connecticut, where I drank two Sam Adams at the Hilton Doubletree last night because the trade deadline is over. Sam Adams is the best beer they have at the Hilton Doubletree. It's a sad... When you call and say, hey, what beers do you have? And the answers are, the first three answers end in light. Bud Light, Miller Light, Coors. I'm sorry. That's just not, this, you got to do better. The trade deadline is over. And joining me to suss it all out is ESPN insider extraordinaire, former assistant general manager of the New Jersey Nets / Swamp Dragons and the Brooklyn Nets, Bobby Marks. How you doing?
I'm good. I'd rather just be known as New Jersey Nets, though. I don't know if we want to put that that attachment of the Brooklyn side to things. So I am doing wonderful. And speaking of that wonderful Doubletree, I will miss those cookies because I've eaten two every night and I've probably gained about 10 pounds in the last 10 days.
I don't eat the cookies, and they are so as obsessed with the cookies as the Peabody in Memphis is with their ducks. Like they, you call. Like, I called ahead because I was checking in early, and I wanted to make sure a room could be ready for me. And they were like, and the automated message is like, welcome to the Bristol Doubletree, where our chocolate chip cookies are awaiting you. Like, they're just cookies. They're not that great.
They're warm, though. There's nothing better than warm cookies.
I just think you got to have something better to put on the automated message. Like, you got to have something a little better. The ducks you can put on the automated message.
True.
The ducks are
good
cool
point.
And you put them on the automated message. Anyway, Bobby Marks, what is the single most interesting transaction? We'll leave AD aside right now. What is the single most interesting transaction that happened yesterday to you?
I'm afraid to say this because I don't know if you'll let me back on this podcast, but I'm going to say Garrett Temple, JaMychal Green to the Clippers for Avery Bradley.
God, that sucks.
I know.
That's a sucky take, Bobby Marks.
We're starting this off.
All right,
I didn't want to start it off with Marc Gasol or Tobias Harris.
I was hoping you would say Marc Gasol, so we'll get to that.
Because I thought that was kind of I mean, we'll get to that. I love Marc Gasol trade. But I thought that after the Clippers made the Tobias Harris trade, they were kind of like, all right, we're kind of content. We're going to be in the lottery. Maybe still will be. And then you flip Avery Bradley. You get rid of his money for next year, $2 million, even though they probably could have stretched that. I'm a huge Garrett Temple fan. I wrote about him early in the year as one of those under the radar type guys, even though he's kind of petered off a little bit. And JaMychal Green, and you build back kind of your depth that you lost when you sent Mike Scott and Boban to Philadelphia.
Boban is just known as Boban. No one ever says his last name, just Boban.
And even though they're probably rentals because they're on expiring contracts, I like that move. I really did. That kind of came under the radar type thing, but we knew those two players were going to be moved. But that is I'll say under the radar favorite move.
Yeah, that did come under the radar. Those two guys are good. I mean, the Clippers, like when the Clippers traded Tobias Harris, I said this on Get Up, I think, like everyone counted them out of the playoffs. And I was like, I don't get why. Because their biggest strength is that they have a lot of good NBA players and very few bad NBA players. And Gallinari, who came back last night, now they got destroyed last night, but they were playing the skeleton crew, and Tobias Harris bring similar enough skill sets that I think you can lose one and not lose as much as you would think given the independent value of someone like Tobias Harris. Like, to me, the Clippers are still a playoff caliber team. And then this is like, they just triple down on, let's just get a lot of good NBA players. JaMychal Green is shooting 40% from three. JaMychal Green's pretty good. He's like not as prolific from deep as Mike Scott, but a better defender. Mike Scott's going to help Philly, by the way, underrated, an under the radar acquisition for them. I don't think the Clippers want to make the playoffs. That's why this move is a little strange to me. I think they want to keep their pick. The Harris move telegraphed that. And how the stretch run goes in the first six, first seven, eight, nine, ten in the West is going to be interesting. I think they want to keep that pick and miss the playoffs.
Well, because it's different than Memphis. Like Memphis making the, finishing outside the top, top eight, and that goes to Boston. Like where Philly, it's basically like, well, if we're in the lottery for the next 2 years, we're just going to keep it. I mean, it turns into a second.
The Clippers turns into a second.
So it's not like there's a dying need to convey that pick to Boston.
Yeah, Boston is rooting for the Clippers to make the playoffs.
Yes. Because event they could only have two picks going into the draft, their own and the Sac pick if it's not
the Memphis
one.
Memphis pick. looking at a Memphis Grizzlies box score for the next two months is going to be like an exercise in NBA Mad Libs. It's going to hurt a little bit. It's going to be like Mike Conley and Bruno Caboclo just played like 38 minutes, and you're like, what in the world is going on here? A dude you never heard of is going to appear every once in a while. It's going to be bad.
It's like last year. Remember when they went through like all those guards? They had Marshawn Brooks, and it kept on like rotating over and over.
Your old friend, Marshawn Brooks.
Oh, man. Avery Johnson killed him.
Really?
He really did. And not killed him, but, you know, and we'll deviate off real quick. You know, when you're a young player and you come into the league, you can't lose faith in a player or kind of cast them aside like a year or two after their draft. I thought Marshawn, when we drafted him in the 20s, could have been he's a scorer. So he's got a scorer's mentality. But he got buried in a doghouse and he never came out of it.
This is why I think one of the smart things that James Borrego is doing in Charlotte is playing Malik Monk every game now. I just think you just can't draft a guy like Malik Monk, who you know is a little wild and super interesting and explosive and athletic, but wild. And coaches do not like wild. Coaches want to know from a bench player, you're going to do this thing well and none of these other bad things, and you're not going to like hurt my team at all. Malik Monk's going to do crazy stuff. You just got to live with it. If you draft Malik Monk, you got to live with it. And the East is so bad that like you can survive a Malik Monk bad fourth quarter or bad quarter. And by the way, he's had a lot of big fourth quarters for him. Anyway, I totally agree with you. If you draft a guy like that, you can't then – that's a mark of cohesion in your franchise from the front office to the coaching staff. You have to have a coaching staff who's willing to play that guy through mistakes.
Like Trae Young in Atlanta.
Well, that's different. I mean, they bet huge on him.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things was like you got to let the kid play. Let him play through mistakes.
He's quietly had a very nice month for the Hawks. Trae Young is going to be good. He'll always be compared to Luka, but he's going to be good.
Yeah.
But anything else on the Clippers?
Well, besides the Harris trade, I mean, I like it for Philadelphia because it gives. I think the under, and you hit on it, the under radar part besides Tobias is that their bench got it better. Philly did with Mike Scott and Boban. It gave them some more. But although Landry Shamet losing him. The score.
Landry Shamet is good, and the Clippers are super excited about him. Jerome Robinson has looked pretty good now that he's getting minutes, and they are envisioning those two guys coming off screens with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander handling at the top of the key. I mean, that's years down the line, but Landry Shamet's a good player. I want to see the practice that no one ever practices. I want to see Embiid versus Boban in practice. That's what I want to see.
That would be you're right. Nobody practiced, especially after the All-Star break.
I know.
Maybe we could do a one-on-one.
Yeah. Because Embiid wants to destroy everybody. Everybody. Like, you bring in the G League call-up for somebody for a 10-day tryout, whatever. Like, he wants to destroy that dude in practice. Listen up, people. We have a big favor to ask, and we promise it won't take up too much of your very valuable time. Our show is supported by some fantastic sponsors. You know that, right? Well, we'd love to hear your feedback. Head to podcastlisteners.com and fill out a short anonymous survey. That's it. We swear, nothing else. Again, that's podcastlisteners.com. This is a subject I want to talk about, the Clippers. And so you look at the Western Conference standings right now. The Clippers are 8th at 30-26. The Kings are 9th at 28-26. The Lakers are 10th at 28-27. The Spurs are 7th, one game up in the loss column, 0-3 so far on the rodeo road trip. I'm just keeping an eye on them. Like, they should make the playoffs. Derek White's injury has really hurt them. They can't survive a lot of blows like that, but they're fine for now. But the margin of error is thin. I argued with this with Jalen on Get Up in New York on Wednesday. He said the Lakers are missing the playoffs. It's over. Like, when they lost to Indiana, they laid down and died before the trade deadline. The fans humiliated them. It was an awesome performance by the Pacers fans.
Well, yeah, I've never seen that before.
LeBron's going to trade you. What did they say to JaVale? Not worth it.
I've never. That is not good
that
for the.
That was mean. The JaVale one was mean. The Ingram one was perfect. And pointing the finger at LeBron wasn't they're going to trade you. It was LeBron's going to trade you. It was perfect. It was really great performance by the Pacers fans.
Yeah, it's almost like we need to have a like 2-day reprieve before the deadline of like nothing.
Well, we talked about this. There should be either the Wednesday before the deadline or deadline day, there should be no games.
Yeah.
And look, the Cousins getting traded in the All-Star game made them reconsider when the trade deadline should be. What happened to Harrison Barnes on Wednesday night? I mean, there are only so many nights when the NBA can have zero or two games and stretch the schedule out the way they want to, right? Christmas Eve, I think there are no games.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving, there are no games. They have now put games on the Monday of the NCAA National Championship when they used to have zero.
Never did that.
So it's not as easy. It's not easy to just say there should be zero games. But those nights, first of all, no one is watching. No one in the media is watching. I mean, I managed to watch a little bit here or there, but
I've watched one game like this week.
It's really hard. Like I'm religious about two to 2.5 games a night. I can't quite hit that in these days. The Lakers. So they won last night. It's easy for me to say, but I said it on Get Up and I said it on whatever. I don't even remember where yesterday. Like they should make the playoffs.
They're going to make the playoffs.
If the Lakers don't make the playoffs, what are we even doing here? Like they have LeBron and LeBron looked great last night. They have all these young players who are pretty good. You can hate on them if you want. Oh, they're not worthy of Anthony Davis. They're overrated. They're not as good as Tatum. They're pretty good. Kuzma and Ingram looked great last night. Lonzo's not even playing. Bullock will help them. Muscala might help them a little bit. Not only should they make the playoffs, they should make a run at the seventh seed to get out of Golden State's bracket. And if they make the seventh seed, you think LeBron is scared of the Denver Nuggets?
No.
Think he's scared of Houston?
Nope.
Oklahoma City?
Nope.
He's not scared of any of those teams. I have said all year, the healthy version of the Lakers ceiling is conference finals. I wouldn't pick them to hit that ceiling. But if you're shocked that that team can make the conference finals, if LeBron stays healthy and the rest of the roster stays healthy, I'm sorry. Like, when has betting against LeBron been a good bet? Since when?
Well, and I think because we were always thinking about the moment that, I mean, before he got hurt in Golden State on Christmas, they were, I think, 19-14. He gets hurt. He's out for an extended period of time. They don't play well. The sky is falling. We need to go to get Anthony Davis to fix things. And as they showed last night, like, yeah, when they're playing at that level, I know the Indiana game was kind of an albatross, but when they're at that level, they're a playoff team. And it's going to, I think probably the best thing that happened was that the deadline is not the Thursday after All-Star like it used to be, because this team would be in a free for all right now, but it's over. Nobody's getting traded. You know, we don't have to worry about anything. And you kind of move on, and I think All-Star break helps kind of take a deep breath. But yeah, how the West standings are, this team, I would be stunned if they did not make the playoffs.
If they don't make the playoffs, something bad has happened. They're 2-1 versus the Kings, so they have their, if they win the last game, they'll have the head-to-head. I haven't looked at the other tiebreakers. They've split so far with the Clippers, who, again, I don't think want to make the playoffs. It would be a huge failure to me if the Lakers miss the playoffs. And Ingram, there are a few players in the league who I'm going to watch more closely than Ingram for the rest of the season, because I've been very high on him his whole career, more bullish than most people. This year has been strange. The fit with LeBron has been hard for him, and then without LeBron, he sort of alternates between the creative pick-and-roll player that you envision and just sort of meandering like into these long twos that are just not good shots. And last night, he had 3 or 4 baskets off cuts that are the kind of thing you should do more. He had an unbelievable explosive pick and roll layup finish through Daniel Theis where he was decisive and strong. I just still think there's a really good secondary wing attacker in there somewhere. If he can figure out how to bring the best of his on ball skills when he plays with LeBron into sort of a secondary ball handling role. Because of Davis still being out there, I'm very interested to see how he plays, assuming LeBron stays healthy and they get some continuity in their rotation. He's a massively important figure in the NBA.
Well, and I thought his defense last night, too. I mean, his length.
Guarded Kyrie a lot.
I mean, his length on defense, that is, to be able to guard multiple positions, is that's a nice advantage to have there. So, yeah, I think he, out of the group of players that we've heard about that were mentioned in the deal, you kind of know what you get with Kuzma, Hart, Lonzo.
I like Kuzma.
Yeah.
I thought Kuzma was overrated after last year, and I wouldn't have faulted them for selling high. I thought he was a ball hog who likes to shoot, shot well, fine. I think this year he's shown a grit and a well-rounded skill set. He scores off cuts. He can post up smaller guys. They ask him to defend lots of different positions so that LeBron can hide and Rondo can shift around the floor. He guards everyone from Klay Thompson to power forwards and all this. You know, the center stuff hasn't worked, but I think Kuzma's impressed me this year. Even it's weird, even he's not shooting as well from three, I think he's been a better player.
No, I agree. And you know what happens is we set the bar for these guys so high after their rookie year, especially if you're a player who's picked in the 20s, and it's like we're expecting, all right, what's next? You know, what's next from this player? And I mean, it is okay that they take a little bit of a step back and then kind of figure it out during the season. I mean, I think we saw with Jason Tatum a little bit in Boston, where we're like, all right, you know, we're ready for him to put him in the All-Star game. But hey, it's part of, you know, it's part of those growing pains.
So Anthony Davis did not get traded, which means the Celtics are a de facto winner of the trade deadline because Danny Ainge now gets to pursue him in the summer. The Knicks, I think, will pursue him. I think the Clippers will pursue him. Maybe a mystery bidder emerges. You have an interesting take on the Anthony Davis situation. Please share it.
Yeah, I think they dodged a bullet.
The Lakers.
The Lakers did. Yeah, I really do. I mean, you know, in the beginning of the week, when up here at SportsCenter, I was pretty adamant that he wasn't getting traded to Los Angeles. I think put it at 1%, which I got a lot of hate mail.
Ooh.
I put a lot of hate mail from Laker fans. They were not happy with me. And
Laker
I just,
fans had a week.
Yeah.
They had a week. So I wrote this big thing on the Lakers, the delicacy of how the Celtics could and couldn't negotiate, and this situation. I just have never seen anything like it with so many angles and tentacles and leverage plays and so many franchise tangentially affected. And the point of the column was I thought that the Lakers had an opening to make semi-plausible but a little bit desperate leverage plays that could work with a totally destabilized Pelicans organization. They didn't work, but I kept telling people I would put it at 20%. Not 0 or 1%. I thought they had a little bit better chance. Maybe I was wrong, but I thought they had an opening to make some plays. And in the story, I put Jason Tatum right now is a better prospect than anyone on the Lakers. And the Lakers fans were like apoplectic. Like if you ask 30 GMs, who's the best player out of Tatum, Kuzma, Ball, Ingram? Minimum 25 are saying Tatum.
You're
minimum.
Right.
Sorry, that's a real thing. Sorry it is. I'm sorry.
No, you're right. I mean, and I looked at it. From the Lakers' perspective, like, all right, we're gonna go up Ingram, Kuzma, Ball.
I think Hart got Hart, in by the end.
Zubac. I mean, basically, you know, cap fillers. We got to take Solomon Hill back. Like, what's left with
two
unprotected first, and then all right, you got AD, you got LeBron, and you got. You know, whatever's left, the minimum, you know, you got whatever's coming back from New Orleans, Tim Frazier, Kenrick Williams, that whole crew there. Like, where's the balance of your roster? And then I'm looking at it from the summer where like, you got like, all right, you got those two and you got like $15 million in room to go out and put pieces around there. And it's, I think they really dodged a bullet because as I said before, like, They were 19-14 before he got hurt, and then the sky's falling. Like we need, like the whole mindset from the Lakers was it's a fascinating look at it from when it started. The LeBron started in July 1. We get LeBron. All right, now we're gonna go out and get cap fillers, 1 year guys. You know, we're gonna be patient. Let's build it, develop the young kids. Wait until the summer of 2019, and we'll make that big splash. And then all of a sudden, like. Everything went out the window in late January because, you know, AD requested a trade. And it's like, all right, we got to get him now. And we're going to give up everything for him. And I think, does that mean he won't be there in July? I don't know. We'll see what happens with Boston. But I just think for right now, they dodged the bullet. Let this season play out and kind of see where they are.
See how the young guys play. See if they increase their trade value or just become good players that you really want to have on your team. I'm fascinated by what the offers will look like in June or in July. The Celtics, of course, would love to trade for him without trading Jason Tatum. I don't know that that's going to be possible for them. There was the fundamental truth that I don't think the Lakers could overcome, no matter how they played it, was the assumption that they will offer the same thing in July that they were offering yesterday, whatever it was, whether it topped out at the offer you just said. there was a school of thought among some people in the NBA that the offers in the aggregate will not be as good in July as they were yesterday, in part because of uncertainty over Kyrie. Now, if that is resolved, the Celtics will make a strong offer. And in part because there were teams that maybe placed value on getting Anthony Davis for the next 2 months in the playoffs. I don't know if any of those teams made real offers other than the Lakers, and that value now disappears. I still think the Lakers will offer what they offered. I really do. And if they don't, then the Pelicans misplayed it. But I just couldn't overcome that no matter what leverage plays they made, no matter how they could look at the Celtics and then say to the Pelicans, hey, if Kyrie's not there, maybe they don't offer you Tatum. Maybe this is the best you get. Maybe we pull back some stuff. I just don't think they're going to pull back some stuff. I just really don't.
Well, yeah, because I think, as you mentioned, the Rondo, Beasley, Lance Stevenson group, those guys were just to make the money work. I mean, they're on expiring contracts and they're not going to be there, and you remove them and it's the basically the same group of young players. So that's why when we were talking about, you know, why he probably wasn't going to get traded was because that package is going to be there. And will that change when, if Kyrie leaves and Boston all of a sudden feels like, you know what, it's too aggressive for us to go? Will the offer decrease a little bit? Possibly, but, for now, I mean, the mindset is that they know they have, they've kind of have a, New Orleans has a baseline of what they think of what is out there.
And as you've pointed out before, and just hinted at now with the cap space figures, the Lakers' best path to a really good team, a super team, is to sign a free agent first and then trade their young guys for the third star.
Yeah.
That's the where the cap math is easier for them. Or sign a free agent and the young guys are good and you have like nine really good players on your team. Who that free agent is, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know that as of today they are the front runner for any of like the top eight free agents in the whole league. I don't know that they will go eagerly after DeMarcus Cousins because of the complexities of adding Anthony Davis to that team. So we'll see. And, you know, the Nets have a Max Slaughter access to it. Yeah. The Knicks have two. The Lakers have one. The Clippers can have two.
Yeah.
Dallas has now opened one, and I think they'll be aggressive. Like there's gonna be a lot of competition for the best guys.
Yeah, I mean it's. I think we've got nine teams. There's like I think I wrote about it. There's like five or six wild cards. I call them like the Utahs and New Orleans. I don't know if I could put them as a wild card because they'll probably be rebuilding. But it's a top heavy group of, with New York, Brooklyn. It's amazing. The four big, you know, two New Yorks, two LAs, Dallas, which is interesting because what is the Luka Doncic effect recruiting free agent? And he's like, you know, all of a sudden we put him as the face of the franchise now as your selling point, which is rightfully so as with Porzingis. And then it seems like Indiana will be fascinating. Do they just keep their own guys and or do they kind of go out and get a? I've heard, you know, I think you might have wrote about it. Chris Middleton is like a name that they've like kind of circled already.
And I think they will go after second tier guys like that. And Philly theoretically taking Harris off the market.
Yeah.
Has shrunk the number of those guys that there are. Now we'll see what happens to Philly in the playoffs, but.
Well, and Philly too is interesting because, like, yes, you invested a lot with Butler. What you gave up, I mean, Covington, Sarge, but I think you gave up more probably for Harris.
They did,
and so
they got a first back yesterday for Fultz, and they have a million extra seconds.
So if you with Fultz moving, and let's say you walk away from the altar with Jimmy Butler, let's just say you get to the point you're like, you know what, this is not going to work, and you keep Tobias, like you have money to go out and get another guy.
A sneaky big part of the Fultz trade was that he makes a lot of money as the number one pick in the draft. I think it's like $9 million and then an option for 12 or something.
Yeah, it's a big number.
Getting that off the books had value to them. I think it's a fine play for the Magic to make. Why not? You know,
well, they've been needing a point guard. So I mean, it's a development project.
Long guys who can't shoot. That seems to be their MO. Yeah. For years and years now.
Yeah.
So they got a long point guard who, I mean, literally can't shoot.
The funny part, too, is that pick that went to Philly is basically, it's the pick that Philly got from OKC for Jeremy Grant. It came full circle.
I love when picks come full circle. Nothing was better, ever better than Phoenix at the draft last year.
The Miami pick.
The Lakers pick. Right. The Lakers. I don't even remember what it was, but the Phoenix traded a lot of stuff to get back a pick that it had to begin with.
Yeah.
So we hinted at the East playoffs, and obviously the biggest story of the trade deadline were the top three teams in the East and loading up, and Boston not doing anything because they kind of couldn't. If those four teams advance, and apologies to Indiana without Victor Oladipo, I'm not sure that they can get in that conversation. The second round of the playoffs is just going to be an absolute war. And I don't care what anyone says today. Elton Brand, who is making his mark already and really well regarded around the league already, said today, I saw Tim Bontemps is at the presser. You know, we plan on re-signing everybody. This is our big four. We've got permission from the owners to go into the tax. I don't care. If they get rolled in the second round of the playoffs, so many things could happen between now and July 1. Chemistry problems, huge playoff disappointments, injury. I don't care what you say today. It is not a lock that they are maxing out both those guys, Harris and Butler. It's just not. And the playoffs are going to be telling for all of these teams. If the Celtics get rolled in the second round, it's a disaster. It's a disaster. If they get rolled in the second round in a way that Kyrie Irving looks around and says, boy, these guys didn't step up. Yeah. Gordon still doesn't look like himself. I don't know when he's ever going to look like himself. It's a disaster. It's an organizational disaster.
And it's realistic. I mean, it really is. I mean, you look at where Milwaukee and Toronto are. I mean, you can make the case that they're better. You know, I mean.
You know, I wrote this last night. I think the Celtics, I'm not going to say they're the worst of those four teams. I think they have the least margin for error game to game. Yeah. Like they need to play really, really hard and really, really well. And they just don't have the Gordon Hayward that they thought they were going to get. Jaylen Brown's been up and down. Marcus Morris has started a little bit to not hit every single shot. Horford has looked better in the last month with his use for them. Kyrie's obviously been unbelievable. I think Boston might be the underdog against all three of those teams in the playoffs. And they really need to play to their ceiling every game because they don't have the star talent. As great as Kyrie is, he's not the best player in any of those playoff series. Yep. And, you know, Tatum needs to be a star. And he hasn't been a game-to-game star quite to the level people. I think Boston's done an unbelievable job. Obviously, this is a masterclass in rebuilding. I'm sorry to bring it up. You lived through it.
Yep.
I'm not, and they have hope that Philly's depth and chemistry doesn't work. We got to see Philly play with all these guys. If I were a Boston fan, I would be worried about the second round of the playoffs right now.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you get Milwaukee, which would be a
Milwaukee is awesome.
Yep.
I mean, no one is paying attention because it's been Anthony Davis for the last two weeks. They are kicking the shit out of everybody. Everybody who lines up in front of them gets destroyed. And the pieces fit. You just know when you watch a team when everybody understands what is going on. When everyone understands what the team's identity is, what their place within it is, how to play with freedom within it but not break out of it, Milwaukee has found it. Milwaukee is there. And they were in Brooklyn on Monday, and I talked to some of their players and I talked to some of their coaches, and even some of the coaches who, you know how coaches are, it's never good. It's always bad. Yeah. It's always one step away from being terrible. They all feel like something special is happening here. Like Milwaukee... I've written it before. Their second best player is not as good as the typical second best player on a championship team. But the depth and the fit and Giannis. Giannis is out there. Like that Nets game.
Yeah.
And some of these other games. Like he was 17 of 21 in a game the other night. There are nine dudes on the court playing one sport. And then there's Giannis playing his own sport. They are really good.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, after every year, I would write an off-season, you know, I call off-season focus on teams in Milwaukee. It felt like I was like paste and cut. Like, how are we going to fix the depth problems? You know, like their depth is not very good, and their depth with now with Mirotić, Ilyasova, George Hill. Like, you know, you got a lot of like veteran guys here, and like you need those in the playoffs. Like, you need guys to come off your bench and hit shots. You can't go into lulls during, when you get into the postseason. And like I said, the Mirotić is like an insurance policy. Like, the guy has been hurt, but like, he shoots 38% from the three, and we know what he did last year when New Orleans acquired him.
What's his beard status? I think he needs to go back to the bushy beard. Get it as bushy. Go Julian Edelman for the playoffs.
Edelman had his beard shaved. I don't know if you saw that on the Ellen show.
I did. Yeah. I think Mirotić needs to go back to just be disgusting. I mean, it was disgusting.
The rare 4 second-round picks traded for Nikola Mirotić.
That's a good trade return.
Sure.
For the Pelicans.
Great.
It's a good trade return.
Yeah.
I wrote this yesterday. I mean, New Orleans kicked around Fultz for Mirotić before they got Harris, and I'm not sure how far that got, but that was an interesting construct too, and also an indication I think New Orleans is ready to go in on a youth movement at some point.
Yeah, but the hard part is when you go on a youth movement and you've traded, 6 first-round picks in the last...
A lot of first-round picks.
Yeah, it's hard to shift going that way because it's like you don't have another... Like, your bench isn't filtered with all these, like you don't have, like, Malik Beasley and Hernan Gomez and guys like that to kind of... You know, Monty Morris to kind of... Well, all right, here's our next...
Denver has done an unbelievable job. I mean, you just can't give them enough credit for all these guys who are contributing. Porter's not even playing, you know.
Isaiah,
Monty Morris is awesome.
Yeah.
The guy's
he's probably one of the better backup guards in the league.
Okay, so let's talk about the other trade. Top of the East, what were your thoughts on Toronto acquiring Marc Gasol?
I thought it was a great trade because I looked at CJ Miles had not played well this year at all. Player option for next year. Delon Wright was going to be a restricted free agent, and JV's been hurt, but he'll be back. And you get Gasol, you know, not the all-star Marc Gasol, but a damn good player. He basically gave up a second-round pick for him. And I think the interesting thing now is, like, how do they fill out the rest of the roster? They've got 5 roster spots as far as who's going to be in there, but. Man, you saw them in Atlanta Thursday night go in there with like 8 guys and win on the road. But I like the Marc Gasol trade. I thought that was, besides there and Charlotte, kind of those were, or maybe an outside chance on Detroit. Those were kind of, that was the best home for him.
I'm surprised Detroit didn't get closer on one of the Grizzlies. I thought for sure yesterday would have brought 1 p.m., Detroit is in hardcore negotiations for Mike Conley out of not nowhere, but I just thought there was a deal to be made there. I guess there wasn't.
I think there's some reluctance as far as moving first round picks there. Talking to people around the league, the Reggie Jackson his value has gone downhill where basically teams are asking Detroit to add a pick for them to take back his contract there. So
I get, do you then have to throw in another one like Conley?
That's like when we did the Boston deal, I hate to talk about it, but when we traded Gerald Wallace as part of that trade, it was for them to take his contract.
Right.
It wasn't like we didn't trade the picks for like the equal value of Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. It was like, okay, you got to take, you know, Gerald Wallace's $30 million out, and that's going to cost you a first round pick. Like, that was like a separate deal on itself. So
someday I'm going to get you drunk and you're going to tell me the real story of the Gerald Wallace trade.
Oh, man.
Someday.
I don't even remember. It's like a blur. Well, I'll just blame Dwight.
Why?
Because Dwight opted in.
Oh, okay. That's right. The Dwight mayor, I've sort of blocked out the minute by minute.
That was a... You know, his cousin was with him to make sure that he did not opt into his contract. His agent, Dan Fagan, rest in peace, had put him with, they were in San Antonio, and he actually sent him to make sure, like, he did not sign any paperwork because there was a framework of a trade.
Literally grabbed the pen out of his hand.
Basically, it was like sleeping alongside the bed like you were in a hospital to, like, make sure, like, he did not do anything foolishly. And he wound up, they won, I think they won in San Antonio. They got on the bus and he said, I'm opting in. Whoa, wait a minute. And I think JJ's talked about it. And he's like, everybody looked at him like, and then he got to the airport. They landed in Orlando. Otis Smith was the GM.
Otis Smith said
to Dwight, like, why don't you just sleep on it? And he's like, nope, give me the paperwork. I'll sign it right here. And he opted in, and that was the end of that.
I believe they had his favorite candy either on the bus or on the plane, so the story goes, and that cheered him up.
It could be. And then he opted in, and then we made Gerald Wallace trade, which is, I'll tell you what, thank God I wasn't in the media then. I would not have given the Nets a good grade on that because it's the theory of like.
I did not give the Nets grades.
It's the theory like, why would you, it's like, why would you make a trade for a guy who is a soon to be free agent that you could sign for cap space that you have to attach a draft pick to? It's like that. It's like, plus we fooled ourselves because, well, there's a couple things we fooled ourselves with. We were like four in a lost column out of eight, I want to say. So we fooled ourselves thinking that we can get into the playoffs. That was one thing. The second thing is when you go out and get a Darren Williams type player, who was a good player.
Yeah, no,
I mean, the debate was what, Chris Paul, right? Those two were on that level playing field like in that 2010 era. You go out and you get a player like that, and he's going to be a free agent that you got to go out and make all these different deals to kind of appease the player. So you figure you get Gerald Wallace, you get him for three months, and then that kind of convinces Darren to stay. I don't think it had any bearing on Darren Williams staying at all. And then you have to go out and overpay him because it's almost like,
what do you get, 4 years 40 or something?
Four
like
for
that?
40. Yeah. And it's almost like it's like Tobias in Philly. Like Philly's gonna have to ante up on him.
He's getting a max. They know Tobias is, if he hit the open market, there would be kind of one piece away teams who would say, hey, look, we're good. Like I look at Utah. Utah would love to get him. Yeah. And I just think he'll get a max.
Yeah.
I don't remember how we got onto the Nets, but I'm always excited when we get onto the Nets.
Oh, I was talking about attaching picks.
Oh, so maybe that was what the obstacle was for Detroit. The price for Reggie is one, and the price for acquiring a talent like Conley is another.
Yep.
How do you think Gasol fits in to the rotation in Toronto? That's why this is the most interesting trade to me.
That's the interesting part because, like, you know, you could put Pascal at four, Serge at five. So who's the odd guy out there, right? Is Serge going to come off the bench now? And is he going to accept the role of coming off the bench?
I don't think that will go over well.
Yeah. So that's the – it's not like you got a wing and like – well, if you got a wing, then you got to figure out Danny the Green situation, which is another thing. But, yeah, it's like who's the odd man out? And can Serge accept coming off the bench? Because Pascal is damn good. I mean, he is a good player.
Now, Pascal loved being part of the bench mob last year. There's an argument to be made that his ball handling, bringing the ball up, handoff game is more useful on the second unit when there's typically one fewer guy to create off the dribble. And so, okay, you can kind of talk yourself, oh, maybe put Pascal back on the bench. You know, Serge is prideful. Serge has played the four a lot in his career, most of his career, blah, blah, blah. He's not a good rebounder at the five. I just think Pascal's gotten too good. He put up 33 last night.
With eight guys.
And he can defend every position. His sort of freneticism is an important part of the way they play now, the way he runs the floor and kind of creates chaos. And you could also argue that his ball handling and his handoffs and all that are actually most useful when both Lowry and Leonard are on the floor to play off of him a little bit. And I think one of the things that they have to resolve in the last 25 games is they have an offense, and then they have Kawhi Leonard's offense, and they haven't found a way to mesh those as smoothly as they would like. And maybe Pascal, I just think you can talk around it. I just think on a fundamental level, he's too good now to come off the bench. He's just too good. And so you have to figure out, do you platoon Gasol and Ibaka like they did with Valanciunas?
Yeah.
I don't know that that goes over well with Mark, who is a persnickety sort. And Mark's better than Serge. Still better than Serge. Serge has been awesome this year. Awesome.
Yep.
He has not shot the three well. Gasol's a much better shooter. Probably still a better positional defender. Not quite the rim protector, but good positional defender, better post defender, better rebounder. And as Masai Ujiri said in his presser last night, much better passer and gives their offense, you know, talking about meshing Leonard and the offense, gives them a hub to sort of, especially when the game slows down, to calm them. Yeah. Say, okay, here's Marc Gasol at the elbow. Let's do some stuff. I just see. I think the simplest answer is Serge has to come off the bench.
Well, yeah. And the other thing, the under-radar part of the trade was, like, Gasol gave up money going there. Like, he waived his trade kicker.
he really wanted to get out of Memphis.
$1.3 million to waive it to get to Toronto. And like if all of a sudden he becomes a 20-minute a night guy, Marcus Gasol, like what does that do to him like going into the offseason? Like, you know, it's a big number to opt out of. But yeah, I think if anything, it's probably Ibaka is going to be the guy that with the short straw here.
We'll see. I mean, it's delicate.
Yep.
It's delicate.
That's the hard part of in-season trades. Like, we're not at, like, we don't have 40 games left. We've got, like, you know, what, 25 to 30 here. And the good thing is they get the All-Star break, so you get a whole week to kind of integrate certain parts. But making trades in the off-season are a lot easier because then you get the full training camp to put it all together.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how they work, how much Gasol Ibaka we actually see, because they can play together.
Yep.
But I heard from a couple of teams who are Eastern Conference playoff teams yesterday who were all talking about this, and you know it's not like a landslide of people, but it's people saying, you know, Toronto is scary when they're small and rangy and fast, and they have like Green, Anunoby, Leonard, Ibaka.
Yeah.
Like those kind of lineups, those are the ones that scare us.
Yeah, not the traditional.
If they go big,
if
they go big, that's a win for us.
Yeah.
That was a burbling sentiment after this trade. Was I hope Toronto goes big. I hope the ego jostling forces them to go big because we like to play them that way.
Yeah, that's like bone like the old days, like
yeah.
The traditional 4 and 5.
And Gasol is interesting. As a playoff player in a bunch of their different matchups, you know, obviously he's someone who can guard Embiid. He's a monster post defender, and stretch Embiid out to the 3-point line and stretch Brook Lopez out to the 3-point line. You know, they have Brook Lopez camped out in the paint, and your old friend has been just sensational for them as a defender. So I think Mark, given the price they paid, I think it's a great trade. I think it makes their team better. It's going to be interesting, though.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, but the East is as good as it ever has been. It really has, going back to what you mentioned before. And
the East is really good at the top.
Yeah. Bottom is...
it is a trash fire from 6 down.
Yeah. The Nets will play hard.
Nets are good. Nets are solid.
Yeah.
I mean, 7 down, maybe.
But, you know, you have Brooklyn, Charlotte, Miami, and then kind of teams in the... trying to get in that back end there. But, yeah, I mean... A Charlotte Milwaukee first round series. Whew. I see a lot of NBA TV on that group.
Yeah, with the Hawks struggling, your classic first round NBA TV series is up in the air. You know, it was always Hawks. Whoever the Hawks played, NBA TV is in Atlanta. Pacers have been the other go to NBA TV team, but they played the Cavs last year, so I bet they weren't the NBA TV team.
They weren't.
Miami is just. Miami has quietly hit a rough patch here where they should make the playoffs. They're solid. I think they're better than they've played. But their last month has been a strangely disappointing.
And not against some bad losses against some bad teams, too. And they hit a good stretch when, you know, when they move Winslow to the point.
He's cooled off a little.
But yeah, some home losses on the.
They're 11-16 at home.
Yeah, which is not good if you're trying to get in. Usually, you want to be, you know, north of 20. I mean, at least in steel games on the road. But yeah, they have certainly cooled off a little bit. But yeah, but you look at the bat who in that 9-11 range, like which one of those teams do you have faith in that can run off 3 or 4 games in a row?
Not the Wizards.
No.
No faith in the Wizards. We can talk about them in a second. The Magic would love to make the playoffs. They're 5 games out in the loss column. And that is, people, to your point about Gerald Wallace, people underestimate how steep like 3 or 4 games in the loss column is with 25 or 30 to go. It's a lot. It's like 3, 4, that's not very much. It's a lot. And especially when you have 2 teams to jump over at all, you know, it's too much. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the year we snuck in as an 8 seed, 14-15, we played Atlanta. Like, we were like, I think we were like 3 out of the lost column at the All-Star break, and we had to go on like a 20-7 record. Like, you got to go on a run. You cannot play like .500 ball for the rest of the way.
Yeah. It's hard. It's you need to snap real fast into form. And you know, 5 games out, the Magic are it may be too far. They stood pat, other than Fultz, who I assume will not play this year. But you could tell me anything about Markelle Fultz, and I believe it. You could tell me he's playing tonight, and I'd be like, oh, okay. I guess I'll see how he looks. Tell me he's going to shoot lefty. I'll be like, oh, makes sense. You know, we'll see what happens. Pick Otto Porter or Harrison Barnes. Which of those deals is interesting to you? What do you want to say about either one? Those are the two of the other big ones.
Harrison Barnes, basically, like, Sacramento has always been like the dumping ground of contracts at the deadline, and they went out, exhausted their remaining room to take in to take back Barnes. He's got a pretty big number as a player option, so we'll see how that plays out for the next 3 months. And then did the Alec Burks trades. I did like him on Shumpert, though. I thought Shump was pretty good in Sac, so that's a good deal for Houston. But I would pick Harrison Barnes just because of you can get out of that contract, I think, a little bit easier than that Porter number in Chicago.
It wasn't surprising that they got Barnes. I think getting him for, what did they give up? Justin Jackson and Zebo, yeah. And that's it? Was there a second in there at all?
Nope, that's it.
The price, I think, was a little surprising. Charlotte was in on Harrison Barnes, which I learned last night and did not know. I think they offered a bad first, heavily protected first, and bad money.
Yeah.
And that's why Dallas went the other way. It's like, we just don't want your Bismack Biyombos or whoever the bad. I don't know who the bad money was. Bad money.
Yeah. Charlotte's interesting because, like, I know that we all know they were trying to upgrade at the deadline, but like the Kemba, like with your Kemba, you're looking at, like, this is what your roster is next year too.
It's disappointing that they did nothing.
Yeah.
I think Kemba would be justified to say, like, we had all these balls in play. We had Marc Gasol in play. We were at the goal line. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a noon to 1 p.m. I'm not sure what happened. I'm not sure what happened. There was some last minute haggling over what salaries were going to be in the deal. I think it fell apart, and we were close on Harrison Barnes. It's like, you pay the price for those contracts. Like, nobody wants those contracts. Even like Zeller, MKG, those are bad contracts.
Yep.
And I think if you're Kemba, you're disappointed. Maybe, but he's such a nice guy. And the East is so bad.
And they'll get in and likely get in. Yeah. And maybe they'll steal a game or something. But yeah, I think that's, and he's been pretty up. He said that he's expecting roster upgrades either at the deadline or in the offseason. But I just look at, like, unless you nail your draft pick, you're still going to have Kidd Gilchrist, Biyombo, Batum, Marvin Williams, you know, that group. You need Malik Monk and Miles Bridges to...
That's their upgrade.
That's your upgrade.
Those guys are, they made those guys essentially untouchable. They would not put those guys in any of these deals, which is fine.
Yep.
Then you don't get deals. And that's fine. That's a choice you make. I'm high-ish on both of those guys. So that's the upgrade, is that those guys have to get good fast. You know, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the fit of Harrison Barnes in Sacramento, because I had a lot of guys around the league. You heard this a lot, us snickering, saying Justin Jackson might be better than Harrison Barnes.
I heard the same thing.
And makes 1/10 or whatever it is. Justin Jackson might be better than Harrison Barnes. I'm not sure Sacramento got any better in that trade. What do you think of that?
I think that's a strong argument, because, like, I think Harrison played well when he's playing at the four, you know, and you're kind of going, so if you look at their roster in Sacramento, like, they're overloaded. With, like, you know, Bogdanovic and Bagley.
We got to work on your itches.
I know. I'm sorry. It's part of lack of sleep, too.
Yeah, it's true. Fair. Fair.
You're right. I mean, Justin Jackson could be better than making, what, like $3 million compared to like $25 million. But I think Sacramento's mindset was that, you know, he's a name guy on a, that's our like big free agent addition. We never go out and can get, players like that. But it's like, whose minutes is he going to take away from now?
I think they view him clearly as a three.
Yeah.
So he's going to take the Shumpert minutes. And, and that's part of what makes this interesting, is that, as you said, he essentially has transitioned into a four, although Dallas's roster is so weird with all these tweener forwards that everyone has kind of played everything. I'm going to push back on the Justin Jackson might be better than Harrison Barnes. I think that's not right, and I think it's not fair. Justin Jackson is shooting 34% from three, shot 30 last year on absolutely wide open looks. Like, I think he's an okay player. Harrison Barnes is a good shooter. Mm-hmm. He's a good shooter. He can play the four. Justin Jackson, I don't think, can play the four. He's defensively much bigger, much more versatile. And he can get you a bucket at the end of the shot clock. Justin Jackson cannot. He's just a better, more dynamic player. Now, the he has failed completely as a playmaker. I think the ship has sailed. It's never going to happen. He can't get assists. He can't play make for other people. Fine, whatever. The Harrison Barnes last season tanking Dallas version, where he gets the ball at the Dirk spot at the nail and jab steps 9,000 times and isolates and sometimes looks good doing it, gets you nowhere. That gets you tanking. I get it. That's a bunch of long twos. Nobody wants that. Can't make plays for us. I get it. He's better than Justin Jackson. And if you shift him 75% of the way back to Steve Kerr era Warriors Harrison Barnes, mm-hmm. where he's a spot up shooter who hits 40% of his threes, pumps and goes off the dribble and like does something useful, posts up mismatches a little bit. Like, you still want a little bit of the get buckets Harrison Barnes. That makes him interesting in the right dose. That's a good player. That helps you win. And yeah, he's going to play the three. I think he can still play the three. I think that's fine. Maybe it's not optimal, but I think it's fine. I think it's absolutely fine. And he'll play some four, which will allow them to try Bagley at center. I think it's fine. And I don't think the Justin Jackson thing is right. Now, the player I just described, the Steve Kerr or Harrison Barnes, with a little of bucket getting Harrison Barnes, should not make 25% of your salary cap. That's the issue. Okay? That's an issue for down the line. You want that player to be your fourth or fifth starter and make his salary accordingly. That's just part of the painful thing of team building. You want him to make what Danny Green makes. You want him to make what Robert Covington makes. You want him you would love if he made what he made on his rookie deal when he was Steve Kerr era Harrison Barnes. That's an issue down the line, and that's why the renegotiation of his contract looms very large here. The Kings would like him to opt out and would like to sign him to a long-term deal. I don't see him doing that for anything less than the annual salary he makes now, which means you sign him to 4 years, $100 million. Now, maybe the cap goes up, that 25 a pop doesn't hurt you so much, but I think that's going to be fascinating.
Well, and it will be, because if he does opt out and it's not Sacramento, like, where's his market? Who out there is, you know, we mentioned the nine teams, like, who's ready to pay him $20 to $25 million a year? I mean, that's like, you know, he might make out for guys staying in with their own team, that next tier of.
I have not thought about what his market is.
What the next tier of players. I'm not going to put him in the Tobias Harris, Chris Middleton tier. He's probably the tier three guy. But like, is someone going to go out and give him 4 years, $100 million? But I would take him for 2 years, $50 million, compared to 5 years, $158 million of Andrew Wiggins.
Oof.
Any day of the week. So, but yeah, I mean, that's it. We equate players to the amount they make.
It's a salary cap league.
Yeah.
You know, these resources are finite.
Yep.
It's not Harrison Barnes' fault that he made the max because he hit free agency at the right year. Yeah. It's like, it's not Otto Porter's fault.
Nope.
It's the Nets' fault that Otto Porter makes the max. It's not his fault. But it's a reality. You only have so many resources, and if you spend too much of them on one place, you don't get to spend enough of them on another place. That's just the deal.
Yeah.
What did you think of Otto Porter to the Bulls?
I want to know what the direction is there. I mean, that's probably my biggest thing. I think they looked at it like he's their free agent addition.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they look at it. You know, like, hey, we're not going to go out and get a big guy in free agency, and we got Otto Porter for the next 3 years here, and we can put him with Levine and marketing and see where we go. I mean, if he can just stay healthy, because he's been nicked up a little bit. I know in Chicago, I think I've done radio there the last couple of days, they were like basically crushing the move. Like,
really?
Yeah. They just don't, they don't trust the front office. So that's a big thing. Chicago media is very hell bent on that. and they want to know what the direction of the team is going. So it's like, I'm fine with it. You know, I get the contract, you know, what, 25, 26 million. You weren't going to bring Jabari Parker back. Can you make a case for Bobby Portis Jr. that, you know, were you going to pay him a lot of money?
No.
You were not going to pay him $14, $15 million.
Not with Markkanen and Carter.
No, didn't make sense. I understood it from Washington. It was it's a salary dump basically. But it didn't move the needle for me that I'm going to say like, wow, what did that front office just do?
Yeah, I'm with you. They are the angriest fan base, I think.
Oh man.
Who else is in contention for the angriest fan base?
Well, the Lakers. Well, I don't know if they're angry. I don't think they're angry.
I mean angry at their team.
Oh, angry.
Who's angriest at their team?
Angry at their team.
I think they're the runaway. I think they're the Chicago's the runaway winner.
Yeah, because they see themselves as a big market team who shouldn't be winning 15 to 20 games a year.
You know who's going to skyrocket up these rankings if July doesn't go right? Knicks fans.
Yes.
If July goes wrong,
yeah,
the protests are going to start again.
Yeah.
Like, literal protests in the street.
And it could go wrong.
We'll see.
Could.
We'll see. I don't mind the Bulls getting... Porter is good. I don't mind the Bulls getting a good player.
Yeah.
They're going to say, oh, Porter, Markkanen, Carter, we got our front line. Great front line. Yeah, fine. Yeah. You need someone who can run an offense, and you do not
you
have
need
that.
You need a point guard.
You know, that's the biggest issue facing the team is Dunn is just okay.
Yeah.
And LaVine is a ball hog who makes terrible decisions and puts up empty calories numbers. And looming all over all of this, including what we just talked about with the Knicks, is who gets Zion. Because one of these teams is going to feel a lot better about life in May.
May 14th.
Is that what it is?
Around 9 o'clock. Someone's going to be happy.
Do we know where the lottery is? I think it's in Chicago again.
It's in Chicago again, right?
You know I love the lottery. It's very complicated for me because it's also going to be during the second round of the playoffs. And I'm going to want to be in one of these Eastern Conference cities. But I love the lottery so much.
I sat in there 1 year. I know you've been back there.
I'll skip it this year.
I sat in that room, the back room. It goes very fast.
Oh, the lottery's over.
It's
in
like
3 minutes.
Kiki goes up or someone from legal and they pull a thing out and you're like looking at the chart and you're like, okay, Lakers. Like, you're like, wait a minute. Like, do you even have a chance?
I can't tell you how exciting it is when the first number comes up. If it's a high number, it's like 12, whatever what's the highest number? 14?
Yeah. I think so.
If it's a 13 or a 12. Everybody's in play.
Yeah.
There's like 8 seconds or 20 seconds till the next ball comes up, whatever. There's actually a set number of seconds that it's supposed to be. And if it's a 1, it's going to be the number 1 team, the worst team. You know, if it's a 2, it's everyone, you know, but if it's a high number, there's like 8 seconds of excruciating awesome tension. It's so dumb. I love the lottery. It's the stupidest thing in the NBA. But it's delightful. I might skip it this year. The East playoffs are going to be too good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially it's probably going to be a dominated Duke lottery with Zion, Barrett, Reddish, that group there. But yeah, I mean, someone will be, and then that will lead into the Anthony Davis discussions. If it's, you know,
for sure,
unless it's like, you know, Atlanta or Phoenix. I don't know if they want to.
I don't think Chicago would do it.
Yeah,
either.
Chicago.
Any team we didn't talk about? Do you want to hit anyone that stood pat? Like, we heard nothing about Oklahoma City.
I think the buyout market is going to be fascinating. We're starting to see. We saw Wes Matthews go to Indiana. I think teams like Oklahoma City are waiting for, to be aggressive in that front. Carmelo, you know, of course, will be probably finding a home relatively soon here. Robin Lopez has to work out a buyout. We'll see if the Bulls let him out.
Free Rolo.
Ennis Kanter.
Mike Conley and Robin Lopez. Mike Conley's a different situation. He's such a legend there. They need to get on a conference call and just commiserate.
I know. I mean, Robin's been, the Phoenix years took some years off his life down there.
He's such a good teammate.
I know.
Everybody loves Robin.
I know. Well, too bad we can't reunite him with his brother. That would be fun.
I love
the brother. They got a roster spot.
I love the brother trash talk. Did you see his quotes about Mirotić?
No, I didn't.
About how he felt so bad that Mirotić had to go play with Brookie because Mirotić had lived the superior Lopez experience in Chicago and was about to, you know, he knows how good it is to play with the better Lopez, and now he has to go play with the inferior one. Well, he knows what he's missing.
Quick story real quick. We were in Disney last summer and with my wife and kids, and we're going through Epcot, and all of a sudden you see these 2 7-footers.
Of course they're at Disney,
with the what was that movie, The Mighty Ducks?
Yes.
With their jerseys on. Like, it's 100 degrees out and they got hockey jerseys on. Walking through the park, and, you know, he built a house down there, like, basically, I think, right on property at Disney. But the two good guys, I mean, you know them real well, but Brooke is as good as it gets. But, yeah, I think Robin will be a fascinating name. We'll see if Markieff Morris can get healthy, right? I mean, that's kind of the...
That's a sad one. That's a weird one.
So that's what everyone's waiting for, the next Marco Bellinelli or Son Ilyasova.
Well, the Sixers have their eye on Ellington, who fits. I mean, he is one of those guys who runs around and can shoot really contested threes and had the greenest light in the league in Miami.
Yeah, they would probably have to wave like Justin Patton or something like that to create a roster spot. But
no one gets more excited about these things than the fringe moves. You got the roster spot calculated.
I already wrote my buyout article for tomorrow, for Saturday. I got it all laid it out. Everybody out there who's got roster spots.
I think less than 3 minutes passed after I walked into the conference room. We were all in Bristol yesterday before you mentioned the Mavs opening up the biggest trade exception. You were giddy. It was like you were absolutely giddy.
Between that and how much cash is in deals. I love cash deals. Nothing better. Especially when teams like...
What happens to the cash?
Well, I told the story about the Korver. I told on Woj's pod, the Korver trade.
We bought the copy machine.
We put a copy machine and paved our parking lot.
But, like, does a check appear? Like,
they wire you the money.
Pay to the order of Brooklyn Nets?
It's a wire. You basically can agree on how you want it, the installments. Like, I saw, like, Houston, God bless Dalmore. They paid a team, I think it was Chicago, like $1.1 million. They paid in, like, 10, like, $100,000 installments, like, on the first of every month.
Hey, can we never listen to Tillman Fertitta again, by the way? We don't care about the tax. How many moves did Daryl Morey make just to get? But I'm serious. You say so, you declare something like that, and you do it wagging your finger at the media for daring to suggest that the luxury tax might be important. You don't just say it's unimportant, which is a lie. You are haughty about the lie. Yeah. And it's a lie.
Yeah.
So then why would I listen to you again?
Yeah. I mean, they say they made like a $3 million because they're going to get the tax distribution now. Pretty nice. Good work.
I don't care if you lie to me. I really don't. That's part of the job. Don't, like, shame me as you're doing it. Just don't do that.
Yeah. Well, we saw a lot of teams. I think every team except Golden State made tax moves to get under. I mean, Rodney Hood for Stauskas Baldwin was a basketball move, but it saved them.
Yeah.
It saved them money, but we saw a lot of money, a lot of financial moves. And Houston, besides Shumpert, every move was cost efficient.
And they didn't hurt the credit to the front office. They didn't hurt their team doing it, really. I mean, there's certainly some opportunities they probably missed out on. And I don't know how far under the tax are they now?
Like 600,000. So they're going to have to be careful with a couple 10-day guys and then maybe.
Well, they've been saving this mini level exception, like $3.9 million of it, but you can't use it.
No.
You can't use it's a tool sitting there uselessly, like every tool I own, because I don't know how to do anything. all right, Bobby Marks, you got work to do. It's always delightful to catch up. This is the first in-person one we've ever done, actually.
I appreciate it. And please let me back on the next time, even though I did say Garrett Temple, Jermichael Green is one.
No, it's fun. I'm happy to talk. You know what? It got us into a good Lakers discussion. All right, Bobby Marks, you got a buyout article coming tomorrow?
We got a buyout article tomorrow, and then we'll have some summer 2019 cap stuff.
Ooh.
4 months ahead of schedule, probably next week sometime.
Start getting some sleep because July is going to be here before we know it. And no one is going to be able to sleep for the first week of July.
I will get my Hilton points at that double tree because I feel like that's going to be my second residence come the offseason.
Oh, July 1 to July 7 is going to be so insane. I can't wait. It's going to be incredible. All right, Bobby, thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.